The crippling of individuals, I consider the worst evil of capitalism. Our whole education system suffers from this evil. An exaggerated competitive attitude is inculcated into the student who is trained to worship acquisitive success as a preparation for his future career. And that quote comes from Albert Einstein. Welcome to Surviving the Matrix, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Maxwell Egan. It's a pleasure to be with you once again, and I'll be your host for the next hour. This show today is going out on American Voice Radio. It's not on the People's Voice Television in the UK this week because the station is having 2 weeks holiday. And so for those of you who are watching the presentation on YouTube that will go along with this radio show, that's why there has been no intro this week. This is just kind of a fill-in show, ladies and gentlemen, and it will probably be the same next week, and then I'll be back to the same television format for all subsequent YouTube clips for the rest of the year. But this is a special American Voice Radio presentation, and so I thank all of you regular listeners for joining me on the air today. And so, yes, folks, returning to the opening quote, acquisitive success, acquisition. We're trained that really that's what life is about, isn't it? It's all about acquisition, and that we should spend our lives collecting stuff, and the more stuff we get, the more worthwhile we are, and at the end of our lives, the one with the most wins. Of course, nothing could be further from the truth, but this is the mentality that is drummed into people from a very early age, and this mentality, this belief that the economic model is real and it is a mechanism by which we should judge ourselves is one of the main causes of all the problems that we see in the world today. And this is something that I've spoken to you about many, many times, and so there is no real point in me reiterating what I've already said to you so many times, but I do think that was a wonderful quote made by Albert Einstein, who noticed that this was the training people were receiving way back in the 1950s when he made that statement. And times certainly haven't changed, folks, and the state of the world today is a direct result of this mentality being ingrained into people. And even if you look at it on a macrocosmic level, not so much on a community level, you can see that this is the reason we go to war with other countries. It's about acquisition. We judge our own country by what our country controls, what resources our country controls, and essentially what other countries, and therefore what people our country controls. And we do this, and we look at things this way, and we allow this type of reality to remain around us because we believe it's all about acquisition. We believe we can own things. We believe we can own parts of the planet. Even though we're only here for 50, 60, 100 years, we believe we can own something that's been here for 4.6 billion. That's an interesting concept, really, isn't it? It's all about acquisition. And again, this is what I've spoken to you about so many times when I've said this is what the economic model does. This is what the imposition of money over the mentality of people does. It creates this belief in ownership. And because there is a belief in ownership, it creates a belief in scarcity. And people believe that they're in scarcity if they don't own things, which they can essentially never own anyway. It's just stuff that shares their space with them, but it's not really anything they own. And so it creates this whole vicious circle. And so it is the monetary system itself which has created all of the problems, has created all of the scarcity, and has therefore created the need for acquisition, the need for profit, the belief in ownership, and all of the problems that go with it. It's an interesting little cage we've constructed for ourselves, really, folks. It's a mental cage. It's something that isn't real, but we believe it is because we place value on paper. Quite amazing, really, when you step back and look at it. And as I've said so many times, folks, this monetary system, it affects the mind like a psychic pathogen. And once you superimpose this economic reality, this commercial reality, over someone's consciousness, it's very, very difficult for them to break out of that commercial reality and to see the world the way it really is and the way it could be were it not for the imposition of money over the human consciousness. And it's interesting stuff, money, isn't it? It's kind of like this stuff that we have this love-hate relationship with. We love it. We love to have it. When we don't have it, we hate the fact that we have to spend so much of it on things that we want and that the cost of living is so high. We hate that we've always got bills, but money itself, we love the stuff because we believe it gives us freedom. We believe it grants us access to the abundance of the world. And we believe that the abundance of the world cannot be accessed were it not via this stuff. And it's a program, ladies and gentlemen. I've spoken to you about this many, many times, but it is. It's a program. And I'm sorry if I seem to be fixated on this topic, but it is one that provides me with an endless source of fascination because I just can't understand why people can't see money for what it is. I mean, I know that we all need money. Everybody knows that we all need money. It's just that people never really seem to ask why. Why do we need money? Why do we have to pay to be alive? How did this situation come into being? Because money is something that people just take for granted. They all know that they have to pay to be alive. They all know that we do need money, but they never ask why. They just take it for granted that money is there, it's always been there, and that's just the way things are. But really, folks, it's the way things have been contrived. Because money, as I've said so many times, is the glue, the catalyst that holds the entire control system together. And sure, we all need it, and that probably isn't going to change any time in the near future. But even though we need it, it would be great if we could just put that aside a little bit in our day-to-day dealings with people and just start to give to people around us a little bit, rather than always putting an economic value on every action we perform for another person. Because sometimes it's just good to give, folks. And in fact, giving is our natural state of being. We are naturally caring, nurturing, giving people. And this is what money has taken away from us. And that's why I think it's important for people to look a little bit deeper when dealing with the people around them and not always put money at the forefront of their thoughts. As I said, folks, we do all need it to survive. I know I need it to survive, the same as everybody else. But that still doesn't stop me from giving to the people around me and attempting to break down the barriers in my community in that way. I think giving is a very, very important thing. I think it's a very natural thing for us to do. And it is something that this system tries very, very hard to prevent us from doing. They don't want us to have this natural, compassionate attitude to the people around us. They always want us to see people as a potential revenue stream or a potential source of income, a potential source of profit. That's the way they like to train us to think about people. And again, this is due to the economic model because we base all of our understanding of society and all of our judgment of our lives and our social standing and the way we view ourselves, everything, all of it is based on the economic model. It's always based on what possessions we've been able to acquire during our life and what our economic value is, because it is this economic value that determines our social standing, all of which are pure fiction. Now, when you look at this economic model and this perceived social standing based on acquisition and what you have been able to acquire in your life, and you look at it on, as I said, a macrocosmic level and apply it to countries, then you can also see how this mentality affects people and causes people to support certain wars that their government may be indulging in. I remember there was somebody in the United States that was interviewed years ago and they asked them about America's stance in Iraq. Their main response was, well, we need that oil. And that is our oil because we discovered it, regardless of whose country it's in. And again, folks, it's all about acquisition. So you can see how this has created a huge problem in the human psyche and how it is responsible for virtually all of the damage and degradation and destruction and environmental damage and pollution that we see all around the planet. It's all because of this attitude that people have adopted purely because of this economic system that's been superimposed over human consciousness. And again, folks, it's a program. And not only is it a program, it's also a pathogen. It's a psychic pathogen. It's a psychic parasite that has infected human consciousness and which causes us to continually rape and destroy and pillage the world around us. Simply because under the logic of the economic model, it makes perfect sense for us to do so. And our governments are always talking about economic security as a motivation for so many things they do. I mean, here they're tearing up the Great Barrier Reef and turning it into a gas port in order for economic security that our Prime Minister has told us that our country needs. Of course, when the governments indulge in this type of economic security, it is naturally for themselves and for the corporations they support. It's never for the people, because they always tell the people that we're going to have to tighten our belts and bring in more austerity measures to get us through these tough economic times, and they say that while they keep running off to the bank with all of the money and the wealth that they are constantly stealing from the people of their various nations. This, of course, being the only purpose of modern governments, ladies and gentlemen, and that is to steal the wealth of the people from right out from under their noses, without the people being able to do a damn thing about it, because it is the governments who write their silly rules on pieces of paper and who have the monopoly on violence with their thugs in blue uniform that they get to oppress the people and bully the people and belittle the people and corral and control the people into doing what the government wants. It's just one big crime gang, folks. We're seeing a lot of it here in Australia as well, actually. We're seeing a huge loss of rights in Queensland, Australia. Police in Queensland have been given unprecedented powers to abuse the people with. Any type of back talk at all to a police officer in Queensland will result in an arrest. If you refuse to answer a question, it will result in an arrest. And this is all, of course, to prepare the country for the arrival of the executives of the global slavery system when they meet here in Queensland, Australia for the G20 summit in November 2014. That's, of course, all the G20 summit is, folks, is a meeting of the executives of the global slavery system. And you think about the amount of security they've gone to in Australia, they're virtually going to lock down most of Brisbane and keep people away with extreme prejudice, even though Australia has been disarmed due to the events staged by Howard Magoo and the corrupt Australian government when they massacred a large number of people at Port Arthur many years ago and used the event to disarm the Australian people. So even though the Australian people have been disarmed to an incredible degree, they are still going to lock down Brisbane and bring in this incredible amount of security around the executives of the slavery system that are meeting there simply because they wish to demonstrate to the world that they can do so. And the Australian Prime Minister, of course, as all successive Prime Ministers have also done, just loves to demonstrate to the slave traders that he works for how controlled the Australian people actually are. Because they are, folks. The Australian people are very, very controlled. Australia is, in fact, one of the most controlled countries on earth. You think about the size of this country, we have less people than in Greater New York. We have a country of around about 26 million people, and we are a country of around about 26 million laws as well. And, of course, the more law you have, then the more totalitarian and repressive your government is. That's just the way it goes. And that's what they do, folks. I've spoken to you about that before as well. They bring in laws for everything, thereby making everything a crime. If you have a lot of crime in your country, it's usually not because you have a country of criminals, but because you have a country of excessive legislation. Because every law that is created thereby creates a new crime. I mean, most crime is essentially created by government on purpose in order to extract revenue from the people. Again, folks, that is the purpose of governments, to milk the wealth of the people. And the most effective way of milking the personal wealth from your population is through revenue. And you do that by enacting more and more legislation, making almost everything a crime. Thereby, you are able to fine people and steal their wealth. And this theft of wealth is, unfortunately, the main purpose behind legislation that is enacted by government. They enact legislation not to keep you safe, but to create a new revenue stream. And they do this, of course, under the guise of protecting the population, when really all they're doing is protecting the banking cartels they work for and impoverishing and discarding the population. And again, folks, it all ties back to Agenda 21 and the UN depopulation plan. And speaking of Agenda 21 and depopulation, very interestingly and very sadly, we saw the death of Paul Walker, one of the stars of Fast and Furious, who was very much involved in relief and aid efforts that were being undertaken towards the people in the Philippines after the typhoon they suffered. Paul Walker recently discovered and was making noise about the fact that some of the food aid packages that were being sent to the Philippines had been detected to contain sterility agents, and that much of the food aid that was being sent there was actually designed to sterilize the people who received it. Of course, once he started investigating and going public about this, he had a convenient car accident, as is always the case. And anybody who believes that the recent death of Paul Walker was in fact an accident, folks, well, I would suggest that they look at the similarities between the wreck of Paul Walker's car and the wreck of Michael Hastings' car, which was in fact the same model of car. They look very, very similar. And Michael Hastings, who was a Rolling Stone reporter, of course, recently died while working on another big story that was about to expose government corruption. And yes, folks, it was the same model car, and both cars don't look like they had regular accidents. Both cars actually look like they were very likely exploded by remote control. And I would suggest to you that the reason Paul Walker was killed and essentially assassinated was because of what Paul Walker had uncovered with the sterility program that was being undertaken in the Philippines under the guise of humanitarianism and food aid. But again, folks, this is depopulation according to the parameters of Agenda 21. And everything that this government does in its attempts to bring aid to the people, in inverted commas, and to help impoverished people, in inverted commas, it's always exactly the opposite. Usually they create a situation whereby they are able to go in and bring aid to these people, and the aid itself is aimed at supporting the depopulation agenda. As I've often said, folks, the most important golden rule that one should adhere to when listening to what their government tells them is to never believe one single word of it. Because all these people know how to do is lie, and everything they present to you has an opposite and ulterior motive, meaning, and agenda. And I think that I can safely say that this is without exception, ladies and gentlemen. And I advise people to look very, very carefully at what their government tells them. And when their government tells them that they're not going to do something, you can be sure that down the track you're going to see them do it. That's why they've planted the seed of that even happening in your mind. And that everything they say they're fighting against, they are actually fighting for. And look at what we do with everything we do fight against, folks. We declare war on it. We have a war on drugs, a war on pollution, and all it does is create more of a drug problem and more pollution. We don't ever seem to have a war on poverty or a war on homelessness, but we do have things like the war on drugs all the time. And folks, the war on drugs is not a war on drugs. It's a war on impoverished people who use drugs, most of which seem to be supplied by government agencies anyway. I mean, just look at the amount of heroin that is floating around the planet now since the coalition of the criminally insane took over the Afghani poppy fields. This was, of course, one of the main reasons the coalition of the criminally insane went into Afghanistan to begin with, folks. It was to take control of the poppy fields because the Taliban had actually stopped the poppy fields. They'd burnt them all, and there was no opium and heroin coming out of the Golden Triangle for the first time, like, ever. And so the United States economy began to collapse because the United States economy is being floated by CIA drug money, and so there was a desperate need to go into Afghanistan and to get the poppy fields up to full production. Quite noticeably, you'll find that the opium and heroin coming out of the Golden Triangle now is 4 to 5 times that which it ever was before the coalition of the criminally insane took over control of the Afghani poppy fields. That is, of course, the main purpose of coalition soldiers within Afghanistan's borders, folks, is to control the drug trade and to make sure the flow of heroin out of the country does not stop. And this becomes very, very apparent to anybody with any modicum of intelligence who spends any time at all investigating the situation in Afghanistan. It's not about freeing anybody. It's not about saving anybody. It's about drugs and money, folks, as it always has been. And the reason that they went into Afghanistan to help the terribly oppressed women, this was also contrived, folks. If you look at pictures of Afghanistan before the West got involved, what you find is a progressive nation. Women dressed the same as women in any other progressive nation. There was actually no problem at all in Afghanistan until the West decided to go in and stir the pot and get involved in a situation which had nothing to do with them. And they did so in order to control the resources, namely drugs, that come out of the Afghani poppy fields. Heroin is the United States and UK and probably Australia as well. It is their main interest in Afghanistan, folks. It isn't anything to do with people or any other type of resources. It's all about heroin. Because, as I said, the heroin trade and the drug trade is what is actually floating the US economy. And it has been that way for a great many years, ever since the Iran-Contra situation erupted in South America many, many years ago. And it has remained that way ever since, only they moved their drug operations away from South America and moved it away from cocaine and moved it to Afghanistan and began to use heroin to float the US economy instead. It's interesting, folks. You know, when you look at it, the people who spout out all of this rhetoric about freedom and human rights and all of the things that they spout out are some of the most oppressive countries on earth. Look at the United States. It's always screaming out about human rights and freedom, and yet the United States has conducted more wars than any other nation in history. It's the only nation to ever use nuclear weapons against innocent people, and it has the largest prison population in history. You look at Israel. Always screaming out about oppression and human rights, and yet what it does to the Palestinian people is 10 times worse than what the Nazis ever did to the Jews in Germany, if that even happened. I mean, you can't believe anything they say, so why would we even believe that anymore? And you look at what happens in Israel. I mean, they've got more nuclear weapons, they've got more covert weapons programs, they've got more biological and chemical weapons than any other nation on earth. They're building a wall around their country so that nobody else can get in and no resources can get into Palestine. I mean, they're letting the people in Gaza Strip virtually drown in their own sewage because they won't allow any parts in there to fix the sewage plants. They've closed all the tunnels and not allowing the people of Gaza to have any more than 3 hours electricity a day. And then you've got all the human trafficking and body parts and pornography that comes out of Israel. It's virtually leading the world in body parts, slavery, and pornography, and yet all it does is scream out about human rights and how they're God's chosen people and they need to be protected at all costs. And they say that while they say that if anybody ever does threaten us, we'll take out the entire world with us. We've got missiles that we've got trained on every single country on earth, and if we are ever threatened, we will exercise what we call the Samson option, and we will bring the whole world down with us. And that is Israel. So again, folks, you can't believe anything these people tell you. You can't believe any of the rhetoric and lies that our government tells us about how much they support freedom, because if you look at their actions, then it becomes very, very clear that exactly the opposite is true. I mean, if our government supported freedom, they wouldn't be bringing in so many laws and taking our rights away from us. And look, they do this because they say they're keeping us safe. We need to take more of your rights away in order for you to be free. It's this ridiculous reverse psychology that they use, and people just buy into it. Oh, yes, yes, they're taking more of my rights away. They're removing from me the ability to be anything remotely like a free human being, but it's all in order to protect my freedom. And we just buy into it. And I don't know what it is, folks. Maybe it's the fluoride. Maybe it's the fluoride that makes people just go along with this stuff so easily. I don't know what else it would be, but all around the Western world, all around the planet, we see this incredible removal of human rights happening. We see a lot of people protesting about it, marching in the streets about it, but no one's taking any real action. No one's taking any real community action. They're just, like I said, marching in the streets and protesting and waving banners around and thinking that's going to make a difference. But it's not. What you have to do is not comply with the legislation, folks. When new legislation comes in, just refuse to do it. Refuse to comply with it. But as I've said so often, you will only get away with that if you have strong communities that are all going to refuse to comply with this legislation. And that's why the focus has to be on community. That's why the focus has to be on empowerment of the individual. That's why the focus has to be on grassroots movements that create ripples that then ripple out into their community at large. And this is something that I hope to address early in 2014 when I launch the Full Circle Project. This is a lot of what I have planned for this coming year, ladies and gentlemen. Grassroots movements which are designed to empower local communities all around the planet. We've got to start somewhere, folks, and where we have to start is locally. Where we have to start is we each have to start with ourselves. And that's what I hope to achieve with the Full Circle Project. I'm attempting to create a project with which there can really be no leaders. It is something that will just be an idea that people can implement in their own communities simply by changing their perspective, really. And that's what it's all about. Because that's what freedom is, folks. Freedom is an idea whose time has come. And it's calling for us right now. It's calling out for us to pay attention. And I think it's time that we did. And that's what I hope to achieve with the Full Circle Project, which I hope to be launching early in 2014. But I think it's break time here, folks. So I'll have to leave it there for now, and we'll go and have a break. Thank you for joining me on the air today. It's always a pleasure to have your company, and I will speak to you again in a few minutes. Thanks for listening. And welcome back, my friends. So yes, before the break, I was talking to you about the Full Circle Project. Now, the Full Circle Project, I've had a lot of people asking me about this. I've had a lot of people wanting more information about it. I've had a lot of people who have been writing to me because they've heard me talk about a template that I wish to create. And a lot of people have also been asking me about when the new movie is coming out. And folks, look, I've just returned from Peru recently and I've got around about 1.6 terabytes of video footage to go through for the new film. And bear in mind here that I'm making anything from a 1 to 2 hour documentary, probably around about 80 to 90 minutes is where I'd like to have it. And I've got 1.6 terabytes of footage to go through. It's all random footage, and there'll be sections of footage which might be 15 minutes long, which contain 2 or 3 minutes of gold in the middle. And I have a mammoth task ahead of me going through this footage and simply categorizing it into A roll and B roll. And there is one person helping me with this, thankfully, the cameraman who I took with me on the trip, and it is going to take a little bit of time to put this together. So any information about the Full Circle Project I will bring to you when I have the information, when I'm able to. Any information about the film I will bring to you when I'm able to, but I really do need to attempt to focus on creating this film for the time being. I'd like to bring it to you by around about March or April if I'm able to, but I have a huge task ahead of me, especially while I am constructing weekly television shows for the People's Voice in the UK. And so I'd ask you to please bear that in mind when writing to me about this, and please understand if I don't get the time to answer your many emails. I literally have about 200 or 300 emails in my mailbox at the moment, folks, and I haven't even looked to see who has been emailing me, so I'd ask you to please just refrain for a little while, and I will bring you information as it comes to hand, as I get a more concrete and coherent plan with which to incorporate into the project. I also have speaking dates coming up in February and March of 2014, and so I've got stuff I need to focus on for that as well. So I've got a lot of things on the burner at the moment, ladies and gentlemen. I do intend to launch the Full Circle Project this year, but I simply need to take care of certain commitments that are on the table right now before I can bring you any more information about it. Suffice to say, I do want the project to involve workshops that can be implemented in communities right around the planet. I also want it to involve a plan to buy back sections of Amazon jungle that are currently under threat from logging companies and plantation companies and just industry in general, because there's an awful lot of that going on in the Amazon. And there are communities in the Amazon that really do depend on people in the West getting involved, because it's Western companies that are doing a lot of the damage. And if it isn't Western companies, then it's Western influence that has created the need for the companies that are in there to be doing the damage that they're doing. Because it always goes back to supporting Western interests. It always goes back to supporting the economic model. And so I think that's something very, very important that we need to pay attention to. And I've got a really good feeling about the Full Circle Project. I've had a lot of very positive responses from people, and I've just got a gut feeling. I've got an energetic feeling. I've got this intuition that tells me that this project is going to work. This is going to be something that will make a difference, because it's something that people are going to want to get involved in. I really believe that that will happen. I believe that people will want to be involved in this project because it's going to be something that they have input into creating. Because I can't do it on my own, folks. I need input from everybody. But we've got to create it in such a way that it can't be co-opted. That's why there can never really be any leaders in this project. Sure, there could be spokespeople, such as myself. I'm happy to go and speak anywhere anybody would like me to come and speak and to talk about these things and to help other people understand what the project's about. But there can never really be any leaders in a global consciousness shift, a global shift in perspective, an idea whose time has come. There can be no leaders in any such movement, because it's a movement which is not essentially a movement. It's a movement which is simply a concept. It's simply a shift in perspective, a change in the paradigm. It's simply a natural evolution for human consciousness to go through as human consciousness becomes aware of itself. And that's what's happening. Human consciousness is becoming aware of itself collectively and individually, because all collective awareness must come from individual awareness. This has to happen first before it can happen on a collective level. But again, when it does happen in this manner and the collective becomes aware, then it is the awareness of the collective consciousness which stimulates more awareness within individuals as well, within those individuals that are not yet awake. And that is the power of consciousness. That is how we're doing this, folks. Because it started off with just a few people who were awake and a few people who could see a different way the world could be, could see a different idea, a different concept of how reality could function, and began to see through the matrix and began to voice their opinions about how things could change. And it's through people espousing what is essentially common sense, which is all I've done on all of my radio shows. Well, I hope I have. Maybe I haven't got everything right, but I've tried to always bring you a perspective which was rooted in common sense, so that it's really inarguable, some of the points that I've attempted to bring you on the very, very many programs that I've done. I've just been bringing you a common sense, matter-of-fact, black-and-white view of what the world is. And it's these sort of approaches that have helped wake up the collective. And now that the collective is becoming more awake, it's the change in the energetic state of the collective which is helping awaken those people who are still asleep. So the awakening supports itself, and each side of it supports the other. And as I said, folks, I do feel a very, very positive energy attached to the Full Circle Project, and I think people are going to want to be involved. They're going to want to be involved simply because there are so many people who are now waking up, but who don't know in which direction to turn. Everybody wants to do something, but they don't know what it is that they can do. And that's what this project is designed to do. This project is designed, or will be designed, to create a platform whereby people can become involved at a local level in their own community and yet be involved with other communities around the globe that are also doing the same thing in their community. Thereby, what we create is both local and global at the same time. And most importantly, it's designed to put control and put the power back into the hands of each man, woman, and child who has life and who has a soul and who has sentience. I want the project to be able to put life and put control of life back into the hands of the common people. Because I believe we can do this, folks. All we need is the will to do so and the mechanism by which our will may be carried out. And that's what I hope the Full Circle Project will be. I've created a foundation already called the In La Cache Foundation. I haven't yet got an operational account for the foundation, but that should be up and running within the next week or so. So very soon you will be able to go to thecrowhouse.com and you'll see a link to the In La Cache Foundation, and you'll be able to make contributions to this foundation if you wish to be involved in the Full Circle Project, and I'll speak to you about that at a later date as well. I'll probably leave that until I go back on the air with the television show in the UK as well, so I don't have to repeat myself. But that is something to look forward to. It is something to look out for, and I will keep you posted on how that is coming along. But I think 2014 will be the year that we make a difference, folks. I thought it might have been in 2013, but perhaps 2013 was simply a preparation for the things we are about to achieve in 2014. Well, let's hope such is the case anyway. I know something's got to give, folks. I mean, there's so many people that are waking up now. There's so many people that are disgruntled about the way things are going. And there's so much about this system that is just making itself obvious now. And some of the situations that humanity is facing, things like Fukushima, the death of the Pacific Ocean that seems to be occurring because of it. I mean, these are things that are really gaining a lot of global attention. Not enough still, but they are gaining some global attention. People are beginning to notice that all is not right. And people want change. Everywhere I go, everybody I speak to, people want change. People that you wouldn't expect to be even interested, remotely interested in this type of information, are now becoming interested in this type of information simply because there's a necessity for them to do so. People are realizing that their world is falling apart around them. They're not satisfied with their social status as a means of measuring themselves anymore. They're realizing that there's more to life than what they thought there was. They're realizing that they've been caught up in a false reality and given false parameters by which to measure themselves and to measure everybody else, and they're starting to realize that something is terribly wrong. But as I said, they just don't know what the mechanism is with which to deal with the situation. And truthfully, and as I've said before, one of the most serious situations we face in all this, of course, is our police forces. Because unfortunately, our police forces simply enforce whatever legislation is given to them, and many of the people who are currently employed by our police departments are simply not intelligent enough to realize that the world is in a serious situation and that we do have problems with our government, and that perhaps they should be questioning some of the legislation and some of the laws that they're being told to enforce. That really is the most serious problem that we face, I think, folks. It's one of the most serious problems that we as communities face when it comes to any action, any type of community action we want to take, even with things such as the Full Circle Project. I mean, we can create community action, but should we attempt to implement this community action, well, we can go up against our councils, and we may win against our councils, but then all our councils have to do is walk away and tell the police force to come in and oppress the people. And the police force will do it because they believe they have to, because they believe the written word. They believe what's written on pieces of paper is actually law, and that they have no choice in the matter but to do what the paper says. And that is the unfortunate situation, and that's why everything that I think of and every type of community action that's undertaken must involve empowering the community by breaking down the barriers that individual members of the community have with each other. because it is these barriers that allow the police to get away with what they're doing. It is these barriers that allow the repression and the control and subjugation of the common people. Because this could not occur were we to have united and respectful communities that would all stand by each other if there was a problem. And so that's where a lot of the focus has to be, folks, because it is key to our survival. It's the key to everything, having that respect for each other. That is where the solution actually lies. It is in that simple respect that each person could have for the person next door to them. If we could do that, all the barriers would fall away, and when they did so, the entire control mechanism would crumble. And look, I know I've said this to you before. I know I've brought all of this information to you previously. But really, folks, if you can see the effect that having this respect would have upon the world, if you can really see the effect it would have on your local community and thus on the world, then you know, you can see why I keep bringing this same information to you. Because that is the key to the whole thing. That's the key that unlocks the door of the prison. You won't find the key in any paper-based reality. You won't find the key in any forms you fill out, in any declarations that you make, in any letters that you write. You will only find the key to mankind's salvation within your own heart. You'll only find the way out of the prison, the matrix that controls human consciousness, by changing your perspective of what the prison is, by changing your perspective of what you are, and by changing the way you interact with people around you. And this is one of the key ingredients of the economic system, folks, is that it removes that natural respect that is inherent to us all and that we should have to each other from us. Because it puts us in a situation where we always function from a state of scarcity, from a perspective of scarcity, and from a state of fear of scarcity, fear of shortage. Everything about our lives is based in fear, fear-based mind control. And this stems from the fact that we are kept in a constant state of scarcity from the very onset of our lives by the imposition of the economic model. And because we have this state of scarcity, then our lives become about acquisition. And it becomes about climbing rungs on the social ladder. It becomes about our stuff. We never get to experience ourselves because we judge it all on the accumulation of external wealth, none of which is real wealth, and none of which leads us to ourselves, all of which is designed to keep us divided from not only ourselves, but also from the people around us. We just have to break out of this. We have to break out of this mindset. We have to change our perspective of what this reality is and change our perspective of what we are, because that's where change will come from. Now, there's no protests and marches. There's no forms to fill out. There's no battle to be waged. There's not a shot that needs to be fired. There's nobody who needs to be arrested. There's no revolution that needs to take place. All that needs to take place is for people to change their perspective of who and what they are and change the way they interact with the people around them. If we did that, we'd change the world in a day. And I know it probably gets monotonous, me saying this to you week in and a week out. But that really is the key to freeing ourselves from this situation, folks, because after all the rabbit holes I've been down, and that's what I found, after all the people I pointed the finger at, of all the control mechanisms I exposed and uncovered and shook my fist at and yelled and screamed and wrote articles about, ultimately what I've been looking for the whole time has been myself. It's been by changing my perspective, by changing my heart space, by changing the way I interact with people. That's what changes the world. And when you find that, and you find that golden key, what's the point of deviating from that point? I'm not in this movement, if that's what you want to call it. I don't do what I do because I want to be a rock star. I don't want to bring you new, fresh, and exciting material every day. I'm not a sensationalist. I don't want to bring you some type of powerful social and video statement on any of the shows that I do. I just want to bring you common sense. I want to bring you my truth. And I want to bring you, hopefully, the mechanism by which you can use to rediscover yourself, because I believe that that's where the answers ultimately lie. It all lies in the individual changing their perspective. And that's all I've attempted to do with these radio shows right from the very beginning, is to help you, hopefully, rediscover yourself, because that's where the answer lies. And why do I do it, folks? Well, it helps me if you rediscover yourself, because I can't move forward until the rest of the world moves forward with me. And I don't wish to rise from the heap. I wish to rise with the heap. I wish to bring all the people with me. And it benefits me if more people wake up. It benefits everybody if more people wake up. But what's important is what people wake up into, what the frame of mind is that they wake up into, and what the action is that they become determined to take. Because once you do become awake, you do become determined to take action. The problem is, most people go into the wrong type of action. Most people focus on things like violent revolution. They focus on things such as external activism, which can have its place. I do agree that some protests can be highly beneficial. Some protests can make a real statement of solidarity. It's just that most people expend their energy in the protest, and they think that the protest itself actually did something, when really it is nothing more than a demonstration of solidarity. That's all a protest could ever really be. And what I'm seeing with many protests, in inverted commas, that people have, is they're not moving away from these protests with a concise plan of action to move forward with from that point. They go and they exert their energy in that one day in the belief that they've made a difference by showing the solidarity of their movement. But they haven't. All they've really done, perhaps, is given confidence to those within the movement that there is solidarity, but they haven't made any difference in addressing the situation they were protesting about. So we need to have movements or protests that have ongoing action plans from that point. And the action plans can't simply be another protest, because that is not action. That's just protesting. We need to have concise plans that are put in place which will address the corruption of the government which has created the need to protest. We need to be approaching these people and questioning them on the validity of the legislation they're putting in place, for example. I mean, if someone is coming in and destroying the water table in order to support an economic model, is this not an abuse of power because you're destroying the groundwater in the country in order for your coal seam gas company, and you're telling me I can't protest against it because you've written words on a piece of paper? I put it to you that this is an abuse of power, and what this legislation is essentially a human rights abuse. And that's the sort of approach that we need to start having with these people. But again, this will only happen with respectful communities, folks. But these could all be ground plans and plans of action that we all take after we go to whatever protests we're planning on going to. Personally, I don't think protests achieve anything other than a demonstration of solidarity. And I think they can be counterproductive. But if that's what it takes for people to feel that there is support in their community, then so be it. Let them have their protests. But as I said, folks, always make sure you've got some ongoing action plan that is going to be implemented from that point forward. I think that's an extremely important thing to focus on, and unfortunately it is something that is very much overlooked most of the time. And we do need action, folks. We need ongoing action. We need ongoing grassroots initiatives that are going to empower the community. And that's something that should always be the focus in any protest or any movement. If you're joining a movement, folks, if you're joining a Save the Whales movement or a Free the Children from Hunger movement or whatever movement that you're joining, make sure it isn't just all rhetoric. Make sure there's actual people on the ground doing things. Make sure the money's going in the right direction. Make sure there's always ongoing plans. Make sure you're not just simply signing a petition or showing up at a meeting and going away believing that you're making a difference. Make sure there is always some type of ongoing initiative that you can be involved in, hands-on, in order to make a real difference, because that's how we're going to change things. There's too many movements which are just designed to funnel attention and funnel resources into the administration of the movement and set these people up for what they want to do and set themselves up in a manner that makes it look like they're doing something, but really they're not. They're just funneling attention into a blind alley and a dead end. And so often this is the case in all of the movements that we see. So often it's the case in all of the Save the Amazon movements that we see. So often it's the case in all of the Save the Children movements that we see. A lot of the aid that was being sent to the Philippines, a lot of the aid that was sent to Africa in certain places, wound up on supermarket shelves being sold to the people when it was supposed to be delivered as aid. And so we've got to know what we're being involved in, and it's really good to get involved yourself on a grassroots level and on the ground in any of these movements so that you can be sure that things are happening the way they're supposed to and that the movement is acting in a manner of integrity in all that it does. And too often these movements aren't, folks, and that's what happens when you put leaders in place in a lot of these movements, and that's why I believe the Full Circle Project shouldn't have any leaders. It simply needs to be a new understanding, a new way of thinking, an idea whose time has come. And that's what I hope to create anyway, something that will make a difference. I mean, I've been doing these radio shows now for nearly 6 years. I've been coming onto the air and speaking to you, and I'm beginning to wonder if I am making a difference, and is there not something more that I can do? I mean, a lot of people write to me and they tell me that I am making a difference. A lot of people send me words of encouragement, and I very much do appreciate that. But I still believe there is so much more that I can do if I can somehow involve myself with all of the listeners out there in a personal way and somehow create a shift in the paradigm that can ripple out through the community at large in this world, then we can collectively make a difference. That will lead to a global shift in consciousness, and I think now's the time to do it. But look, we're getting very close to the end of this show here, folks, so I'm going to have to leave it there, I think. There will be a link that appears on the website soon to the In La Cache Foundation. You'll be able to contribute there once that link does appear. At the moment, if you are able to contribute to the crowhouse.com or make a donation to the website, there is a link there to the Send a Smile Foundation, who are handling donations for me at the moment, and it would be very appreciated if anybody can make a donation. I've depleted all of my resources on getting all the footage that I can so that I can make this film and give it to you for free later in the year. And resources are really stretched terribly thin at the moment. I hate asking for donations, but if you are a regular listener to the show and you would like to see the show continue, well, it really is up to you at this point, ladies and gentlemen, because, as I said, I have depleted all of my resources, and so if I am to stay on air and I am to continue and I am to even finish making the film, well, it will really come up to the people who listen to the show. And I thank anybody who ever has made a contribution very much for their help over the years, and hope that some people can do the same now. But that is it for me, folks. I'm about out of time. It's been a pleasure coming onto the air and sharing this time with you today, as it is every week. Remember that I will be back on television in the UK in about 2 weeks' time. I think it's January 3rd or January 6th that I go back on air in the UK. But in the meantime, I will still be doing shows here on American Voice Radio. I'll look forward to speaking to you again next week. Please take good care until then. In La Cache.